Blog Talk Radio.
A Blue Spring student had one tooth knocked out and two others broken in an extreme contact at school, he says, while they filmed one.
Okay, Michael, how's the story live from Blue Spring High? Michael?
A student by the name of Samuel Gomez is suing the Blue Spring School District. He says that these extreme boxing matches were fostered by the coaching staff, and he also is suggesting that there is video that shows these boxing matches, anything-go boxing matches, did take place at school. A lawyer for student Samuel Gomez says this is video shot of the bout after their client fought last year. The regular wrestling practice had been canceled, says the lawyer, and so the extreme boxing was in its place.
He was punched in the mouth. One of his teeth flew completely out of his mouth. Two other were fractured.
But Bailey says Gomez won the bout.
He actually picked it up, walked over towards one of the assistant wrestling coaches, set it down on the ledge. The coach said something to the effect of, wow, that must have hurt, and allowed him to go back in to continue fighting.
Baylor says that's the voice of a wrestling coach, James Williams, defending the case. And behind these fighters, you can see the words Blue Springs on wall mats. Now, this is called mixed martial arts, where fighters use any and all martial art forms that they can. The professional version is sometimes called cage fighting, and its violence has made it a popular TV sport. Gomez is accusing several members of the district with negligent supervision. Lawyer Ballard says Gomez sued the school because they refused to pay for the $20,000 worth of dental work required after the fight.
They felt that the school was at fault for not supervising these kids and not supervising their own coach, for that matter, properly.
Back live here once again. Now, very late this afternoon, a spokeswoman for the school district, Leslie Evans, said that since this matter is now in court, the district cannot comment on this. After a student here at Blue Valley at Blue Springs High sues the district, saying that the coaches here fostered MMA. It's also known as mixed martial arts and sometimes known as extreme boxing. That's the latest from here. Back to you.
When he came home with his busted teeth and had to go to the hospital and pay his $20,000.
Story live from Blue Spring.
Point that now, this is pretty interesting because obviously now, the dynamic for wrestlers has changed a little bit with mixed martial arts to the point that now some guys that are going out for the high school wrestling team are doing it particularly because they want to end up as mixed martial artists. So I don't know if this is going to be a trend or not.
But you got to understand, I mean, just for being,
yes. The combat sports show, folks.
You know, because you put this in amateur wrestling for a while, and Philadelphia University, which is a hotbed for collegiate style wrestling. When you're doing amateur wrestling, where do you come from here? Amateur interesting to think, where do you go from there? I mean, you have some guys like Dave Schultz, late Dave Schultz, who's a great amateur wrestler, and he was, coach, and he did all that. But really, because when you jump from amateur, you can't really go into professional wrestling because you're going from two different sides of the spectrum. One is a sport with disciplinary conditioning, the other one which is more choreographed. And it's more entertainment. So you can't really inspire to go from amateur wrestling to professional wrestling. So if you have these kids now, and she's in the coaching, maybe try to use amateur wrestling as a springboard and a discipline that is used in MMA style play. What's the Brock Lesnar?
Right. It's a situation that's but I just wanted to talk about the show here because this brings up some interesting points like you just talked about. And also, I mean, the coach, I mean, what is he thinking? I mean, not only does he let somebody fight in the school gym like this, but he allows videotaping. I mean, get
right.
A brain, buddy. not too smart at all. And, these kids on the video that they actually showed of them fighting, I mean, there's a crowd there watching, and obviously there's a video camera rolling there, and it doesn't look like they're pulling any punches. It doesn't even look like they have sufficient gloves on. I mean, they call it extreme boxing, but they're definitely not wearing boxing gloves. And I don't even know if they're wearing MMA gloves. They just have a little tape on their hands.
That's very dangerous. With the protective equipment, like I know, you're going to have an amateur boxing match, you're required to wear a standardized headgear, a protective cup for your genital area, which I assume they were not wearing here, and the mouthpiece, regulation mouthpiece. I mean, were they using any of these? I mean, it's something you really got to look at. And of course, you have to have, required, gloves. I mean, for a college boxing match, I know I fought, from 170 to 180, I fought from 170 to 190. Knocking out this boy. at that point, throw him with a right hand and have one left, and he's pounding it pretty good. And then he gets a bit of a fast stoppage, and the referee's holding this guy up, and he can barely stand. So when he was in a fast stoppage, the guy's pounding.
Yeah.
But I'm going to talk real quick, because, you know, when I get excited about something, I really get excited about it.
Right.
I can say that I am excited.
Why?
Well, I didn't get to go to that press conference yesterday with Bernard Hopkins. You know, I'm doing a lot of stuff, you know, finalizing a few things before I start my job. I'm not starting next week, but following week. They're about to be working for finishing. So, but I'm excited because I was reading some of the highlights from this, press conference. And there was a chance of talking to some friends of mine that we might go down at the Wednesday night down at Temple, which is about 45 or so minutes from my house. Maybe about 45 or so an hour, so maybe try to head down for some fun. The tickets are going to be cheap, starting at $25. So I'm going to hope they have a fight, see if we're going to have a fight. It's probably the last time in Philadelphia before he retires. And but really impressed me. And the Bernard, the guy's a smart businessman. And the reason I like David Wood promotions and Oscar De La Hoya is Oscar was a guy, he came up from Italy, he came up from Kentucky. Came up from the year he started food stamps. And he turned into a $1 billion fighter and businessman. So he's got David Wood promotions. What's he doing? Now it's got a Bernard Hopkins. Another former street guy, that spent time in the penitentiary, but was also a very, very talented guy. He's got Sugar Shane Mosley in his team now. He's got Marco Antonio Barrera. I think they're a good thing for boxing. And the one thing Bernard said was, they're teaming up here, and this fight's going to be aired live on the Versus Network on Wednesday night, December 2nd. And the Golden Boy Promotions wants to do it if they want to start a partnership with Versus, but now that they can showcase their fighters on Versus into boxing clubs on a regular basis on the show. I think that is the greatest thing in the damn world.
Yeah, that would be good. I'd like to see that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm excited if Bernard is showing Bernard's live on Versus. You know, so if I don't get to make it down that night, I thought I could still watch it. That's why I like him. You know, he's always talking about people, and he's pretty funny. So I was like, well, I always like read his column. And he did a column, I guess, a film, maybe a year or so ago, and he says, who is the fighter of this era? So, don't hit me, dude. Rainfield, if you do it. But Jim Dyke says, who is the fighter of this era? He goes, let's list out your accomplishments. And he goes, well, you know, Roy Jones was the pound for pound number one guy for a number of years, but at the same time, he was always hand-picking a lot of fights, and because he was Roy Jones, had that sweet-ass deal with HBO, he could go to war with it. He could fight Rick Frazier, the boxing cop, or he could fight recently Tony Ferguson. There was a tough fighter, but he was not in Jones' show category. So Jones was always, you know, hand-picking a lot of guys. He fought some good fighters out there, I'll give him that, but it was always like he called every shot because he was so cautious. And I, for a long time, yeah, he pissed off a lot of promoters and everything, and he's had a lot of battles and legal lawsuits and everything, but he's also the same guy that went up to Madison Square Garden when Felix Trinidad was in his prime with thousands of Puerto Ricans there. In the press conference, there was a Puerto Rican flask on the ground in San Juan. They went and went to Trinidad dance. Will Jones has been knocked out two times, and the two times badly. Hopkins never has only been down twice in his career. So Hopkins set the record for middleweight title defenses. So Jones jumped up a couple weight classes and won some titles, but when he went to heavyweight, fell for a piece of the heavyweight title. Was he calling out, you know, guys like Evander Holyfield or Mike Tyson? No, he called out John Ruiz. Did he call out the Klitschko brothers? No, he went for John Ruiz because he knew all he had to do was run around. And when Ruiz couldn't clinch him, he could beat him.
Well, seeing as we're the Combat Sports Show, and I just logged on to BoxRec and saw this funny titled article about Bernard Hopkins' comments on MMA, I definitely have to read this now that I see the quotes. Yeah, and we just played a few weeks ago, we had Bob Arum talking about skinhead white guys boxing, or in MMA. And the guy interviewing him was bald, kind of funny, but this is even worse. Hopkins says, I don't want to watch two grown men wrestling with panties on. And he told this to BoxingScene.com. He continues, I'm from the hood. We don't play that. To me, I'm not buying a ticket to watch two grown men with panties on, sweating, with nuts in their face. That's not me. To compare that to boxing is ludicrous. It's a porno. It's an entertainment porno. I'm not wrestling a guy with panties on and his nuts in my face. So clearly, Bernard thinks that the entire sport of MMA is all about the triangle choke, where it's really the only position that you're going to have a guy's balls in your face. But, I don't know, that's the common thing that they do when they try to make fun of wrestling as well.
You know, exactly.
Famous movie, The Breakfast Club, where they talk about two guys rolling around on the floor with tights on.
Talking about it weeks ago when you played the clips of Bob Iron and you played the clips of Dana White. And what you have here is a two extreme. See, Rich, you and I are a little bit different, but we're not on the extreme side of the fence. Now, you watch the sports and you talk about, you know, you watch boxing match, you talk about the boxing match, you watch the MMA, you talk about the NS, you're a fan of both. I'm more of a traditional boxing guy, but I can appreciate, you know, the mixed martial arts because it's not my kind of thing. It's not, you know, what I'm really into that much. But what I'm more against is that even 15-year-old kids right now, when I was in China a few weeks ago, and they were talking about something, I don't remember what it was, and they were talking about a boxer. Well, I don't know what shit, what UFC? And I don't know what this is. Asshole. You could tell he was all hyped up into something because Dana White put a lot of hype. So I'm more on the boxing side of it, but I'm not on the extreme. But bow down and put on the Hopkins banner and you can scream, box for the anti-MMA. And then Dana White is on the extreme MMA only, you know, anti-boxing. And they're both wrong. And they're both sides wrong because, you know, even though those sports do depend a little bit of each other's revenue, there still should be enough room for both sports. What's right? The highest of big friend down there, you know, big time fan to play.
Pretty embarrassed, even after he promised Dana White that he was going to bring it and himself like he was wanting to fight and ready for it. And then he just went out there and he looked like crap. We kind of got him in the arm triangle and submitted it pretty quickly. And it was funny because Rampage, like I talked about a couple weeks ago, it's like, you know, the classic story for him. He just keeps losing. So he's kind of, you know, losing it himself mentally. And he talks about in his cutoff points where they're, you know, interviewing him, he's talking about hitting Rashad Evans, you know, when they're not supposed to be hitting each other, not in a fight, you know, outside the ring. But Cage, he wants to hit him. So you can start to see the stuff that gave way to his recent decision to leave the UFC. And actually, interestingly enough, I got a message in my email recently from somebody who's trying to talk about the point that the Ultimate Fighter is really letting people down this year. Just seems like the matchups to me, and to a lot of the fans, it seems, aren't very good, you know, because they're doing it so strategically and they've been so one-sided. And the best guys on Rampage's team that he had the best hopes for turned out to be duds, you know, and it's like...
Yeah. And you know what, Rich, and be honest, I mean, that's not really a good thing, because this year was really hyped up when, you know, Kim Battle being on that.
But someone turned into a joke because of that, because you have now the whole focus of all the episodes is trying to keep the suspense of whether Kimbo's going to fight again while he's in the house.
Exactly, and that's not a good thing, because you put so much hype into it, you hype something up, you get a lot of people watching, and the product is not that good, and it's a dud. You got a pop, because people are going to say, this shit sucks.
Yeah, and, you know, you listen to Kimbo, you hear him, you see how excited he is, and you just wonder how the UFC is going to break the rules somehow, or who is going to take the fall and let him back in, because it's got to be inevitable at this point. And he's going to fight again, or else, you know, they're cheating us, really. Kind of like...
I don't know if I can let you get my house, but it's not my house, you're done.
Uh-oh. What's going on?
What's the case? I would be in my boxer. I hope you're watching the goddamn film. You might be sitting on my clothes and on the radio.
Actually, we have a nor'easter coming our way. Big storm. It might knock out the power.
The portion of the rain is coming up through us.
It's going through you right now? Pretty bad down there?
Well, this is the front of the rain right now. It was pouring earlier today. And we're supposed to have a green all weekend, which is why we had green, because it seems like some of that has to be green, that's what game 3 is.
Right.
Well, your home team, Yankee Stadium right now.
Yankee Stadium.
Well, before I go and solve my dog bar, there is one story I got to tell. As Rich, as I mentioned before we went on the air, we had the title fight last week in Madison Square Garden. Between Ron Malfoy Lopez and a good friend of mine, Rogers Matagua. And I was talking about this fight last week. And so, and which is, you know, we saw their records and everything, and sometimes they can be deceiving. Rogers Matagua had a very deceiving record. He was 26-12-2 coming in with both 18 knockouts. And I met him when he came up from Tanzania back in about 9 years ago. And at the time, you know, he had a handful of fights in his native country. He came over here and he could really increase his skills and get better training. So when he came over, you know, he was starting to fight some pretty good guys, like Antonio Diaz, and some pretty good fighters. And he was winning some, losing some, they were usually pretty good fights. So, you know, Franklin was a lot worse than it seems. So Bob Arum, he just handles himself again, goes out and he makes his comment before the fight that this is only going to be a tune-up, and that, you know, Lopez is looking, you know, to set up a big fight with Yurio Castanola. And a friend of mine, who I sent you the article today, George Hansen, was like, you know what, if anybody knows of Rogers Matagua, he has no tune-up, because win or lose, he's coming to fight. Well, Rogers, what helped him out in this fight was the fact that for years, he would always fight guys at like 126 or 130. One time he fought a guy at 135 almost, and the guy was so much bigger that he came back and he dropped the guy and ended up winning the decision. So he played Lopez down at 122, and Lopez, the first round, was hitting Rogers with some shots. I was reading an online blog, and they said, oh, this is only a matter of time before Lopez knocked this guy out. may have, he had him staggered so bad that if it was anybody else, they would have stopped the fight. So, God, there was 26-0 with 24 knockouts coming in. Barely survived beating a guy that was 26-12 coming in. And yet, the first, they were asking Bob Arum, they said, Bob, oh, you think you brought Jesus Matagua out of the match? He certainly deserved it. And Bob Arum was, no, not at all. You know, Lopez just didn't fight. There was a couple times that Matagua went down and they didn't call him knocked out because he slipped. You know, there was no reason for Arum to go for bigger and better things. If you want me to translate that, it means, I don't want to ever see my cash now. Juan Manuel Lopez in the same area code with Roger Matagua ever again, much less the same ring. He was lucky. It's a broken fight. That's what he meant.
Yeah, I was going to say that they probably Malagasy except Matagua has outspoken after the fight. But Matagua, yeah, he's at least put the word out there in the boxing public that he's back, you know, he's good enough, and he may someday get that championship opportunity.
I think the next fight where he really struggled, he didn't look good. I know the one time he was fighting to get a title eliminator, and I don't know, Cerceda, I think the guy's name was, and what did he do? He had to, you know, break, like, tearing a muscle in his cartilage in his wrist in the first round, throwing a punch. And then they ended up having to stop the thing before he left and he couldn't move.
Also, you know, there's a lot of hype about this, you know, these the big fight coming up with Brent Rogers and Fedor Emelianenko, and there was some news that Dana was actually rooting for Fedor, and I think that's because he doesn't want to see Fedor get beat by anyone else but somebody in the UFC whenever that happens, whenever they allow him to fight in the UFC. But also, there's another boxing story that I wanted to talk about. I can't think of it right now for some reason, but I'm sure I'll think of it eventually. We do have some boxing coming up. I think we're going to talk about that later. We might as well get... oh, that's what I was talking about. Wrestling news, not boxing news. A famous wrestler died yesterday. I don't know if you heard the news, but Captain Lou Albano is no longer with us. I don't know if you remember
him. I heard about Mother Blocker. I'm very excited about that. It's like, I have found out a few days ago.
You're excited about Lou Albano's death?
Well, I found out a few days ago that he was going to the hospice care.
Right.
And I was on a website that said, you know, Lou Albano going to sit down in the hospice care. They said he doesn't look great with the hospice care. I've actually met Lou a couple times back in, like, the late 60s, early 70s. Because at the time, WWF, World Pride Wrestling Federation, was based out of the New York area, so the territory that New York, Philadelphia, Connecticut, you know, kind of like a tri-state area, New Jersey. And Lou Albano, the dude would go down, and my dad would always see him in the bar drinking before the matches. And so he did that a few times. And the one joke about it always was I, for years, maybe in the Halloween nut that I am, I was like, Halloween, but I have a Halloween party. No, I'm like, oh, I don't know. It sounds kind of something like a wig or something like that. I'll give you a wig. We'll put a couple of rubber bands in your face and do a Lou Albano. And my mom's real name is, she goes by Barbara, but her real name is Eugenia. I said, it worked perfect. Captain Eugenia Albano. I'm knocking off. Don't stop at me on that. I'm not doing it. And we had a lot of laughs over it and so on. And yesterday when I found out Dave passed away, I sent my mom a few videos, you know, we're looking at some stuff on YouTube and we're, you know, really looking at videos about it. That was definitely one of a kind. You know, he's from
Mitchell. No, I never heard that.
Yeah, he's from Mitchell. He's pretty bad. His father was a very prominent physician in Mount Vernon, New York. I mean, obviously years ago. His father was an obstetric gynecologist that delivered something like thousands of babies in the Mount Vernon, New York area. Crazy,
yeah. Well, this goes to show you the stereotype about fighters and wrestlers being dumb. It's all wrong.
In fact, Rich, I got one for you. I don't know if I've told you this, but I talked to our girl before they messaged for yesterday and told people who I've had a boxing match a number of years ago. In fact, we spoke about this match on the air last year when we were talking to Mitch Taz. Because it was a main event. It was Vander Holyfield was playing the main event, and the chief undercard fight was Mitch Nazienza versus Lloyd Hunnigan, former world champion. This was the third fight back after he broke his neck. And oh my god, I was like 16, so my dad took me down to, 16, so my dad took me down. Well, I was a chief seat, and Vinny put a beat on Lloyd Hunnigan pretty bad. And, I ran like the 9th or 10th round. It's like the Hunnigan's corner through the talon. And when they went to do that, the referee went to stop the fight, and Vicky tripped, and he landed on, like, he fell to his knees, and he landed on, like, the second rope, and he used the ropes to spring, like, he's springing off the ropes in a wrestle. Jumps up, and keeps throwing punches at the boy, and Lou's falling, and, you know, and both corners explode in the ring, and there's a little bit of tension going on. All of a sudden, Captain Lou is sitting in, like, the first or second row. He jumps out of his seat, goes in the ring, through the ropes, runs around like two or three times, and then throws himself over the top rope, and then back to his feet. That was about 16 years old.
Maybe he had some flashbacks.
Everybody in the ring, like both corners, they were kind of like jostling with each other and all that. And everybody just stopped looking at what the hell was happening.
For most of your boxing career as as an amateur, what was your weight there?
With my career, I was basically in the middle, 165. The last couple of years as an amateur, I moved up to light heavy, 168. And, you know, I'm not seeing in my experience out there to be successful. But when I moved up to 78, I go ahead and advance with the, and I had the power to move them to fight and get the big dudes.
All right. And they call you the boxing poet, is that right?
That's correct.
Now, give us an example of what you write about, write poetry about.
I'm sorry?
What do you write poetry about? Just everyday observations or boxing itself?
I mean, mostly about, how to do everyday observations. There was something I started about before I started boxing, growing up. A lot of big friends, I did a lot of writing, and one thing led to another. I go back and read what I wrote because I didn't really have any friends to talk to, and then it became poetry. And later down the line, once I started boxing, I did an interview with someone, and they was like, you know what? How about the boxing poet? That sounds good. Right? Outside the ring, you're very humble, but inside the ring, you're like a whole different character. So, I got to
play the boxing court. And how did you get into boxing in the first place?
Well, growing up, I was a fat kid. When I first started boxing, I was 5 feet, 4 inches tall, 10 years old, and went to Huntstown. You know, summer of 95, we went up to a park looking for a football. Me, my twin brother, and my older brother, my father. And when we got up there to sign up for football, they wouldn't let me take it too big for my age and weight limit, so they wouldn't let me play. However, when we was leaving the park, you know, it was a loud county going inside the gym, and they know me. I stuck my head in the gym, and I seen guys in the ring, I seen guys hit the bag, and I went in and told my dad about it, and we talked to the coach, and from then on, I've been in the gym.
All right. And what do you enjoy most about the sport?
The discipline and the competitiveness. You know, in this sport, you always get better. You know, there's a lot of sacrifices. And I think that a lot of people think that takes a lot out of people, but like I said, the discipline aspect of it is, you know, very competitive. You know, like I said, you always learn something, you always get better. And I believe that hunger is what drives me.
Now, you've been boxing for a long time. It's like you won the National Silver Gloves first time in 96. And you've been boxing kind of on and off ever since. What kept you in the amateurs for so long, and what was your biggest accomplishment there, would you say?
Well, after the 04, Oh, the trials, you know, I decided, you know, I was ready to go pro. However, my parents, you know, at the time, I'm very supportive of our family. And my parents were like, you know, you're still young, you're still in school. Give away the shot, you know. And I was like, okay, you know, I was ready to go pro personally, but I was like, hey, you know, I owe my everything. So I stuck around for a couple more years. I began to lose the hunger for the amateur that I had already accomplished anything I could possibly accomplish besides going to the Olympics. So as I continued to fight and continued to fight, I began to lose more and more interest as far as amateur, so I stuck away from the sport. Because I'm a true believer that in the sport of boxing, once you feel that you're in a position where you either learn everything you can learn or you're not as hungry as you used to be, you could get hurt. So I kept away from it, you know, and when I got my mind back together, I said, okay, I'm going to fight for me. You know, I'm ready to go pro, and I knew in the pros I was doing a lot more damage than I was doing in the amateurs. Now, I have a very, you know, successful amateur career, so once I made my mind up, I was like, okay, this is what it's going to be, and I jumped back to the sport, and you know, I was ready to go.
Now, do you have any details about when exactly your pro debut is going to be, or is that still up in the air?
It's still up in the air. I mean, we shoot for something big, but we don't have nothing concrete right now. So, I mean, everything's up in the air, but like I said, as long as we stay ready, we don't have to worry about getting ready. And we told we're ready to go right now.
What have you found to be the biggest difference between training for an amateur fight and training for the pros?
Honestly, I don't think there'd be a big difference besides, you know, different punches you have to learn. It's a little different because you're dealing with smaller gloves. And the guy that I'm basically going to be boxing is either a guy that I came up with in an amateur or, you know, a guy that has to come up as pro. So I'm already familiar with him, you know, with my experience, you know, I have over 200 fights. And I'm a pro. Several different styles, several different guys, you know, friends, non-friends. I finished the league, you know, the only difference is now you're fighting for, you know, winning it for the world title without head care. And I just think it's the same thing, same training. If you're more of a hunger because now it's something new to accomplish.
Yeah, looking back at your amateur career, what would you say was your greatest fight?
My greatest fight.
With 178 wins, I can imagine you'd have a pretty good top 10, huh?
Yeah, I have. I don't know if I'm still fighting, but friends. I just saw Andre Durrell, a real good friend. I just saw Marcus Johnson. I saw a lot of good girls coming
out there.
It's been a lot of experience, you know,
that it's hard to say what's my greatest fight. Just for video. Well, can you point out maybe, you know, one or two real fights that were your toughest, the toughest guy you ever had to face?
Well, Andre Durrell, he's a very sharp fighter, and then on top of that, you know, real good player. He was a difficult fight, you know. He's just a difficult fight, fighting with players, that's the player that he is. I'll have to say, I fought Marcus Johnson. You know, I fought him, I believe it was in the PAL. I'm going to call it here, but I fought him and I put my hand in the fight, you know. And my biggest fear coming up in amateurs was to have a referee stop the contest compared to the TKO on my record. So I broke my hand in the second round. The referee asked if I wasn't about to fight. I said no. So we went on to continue to fight the four R round. And, you know, he had challenges to figure out the point. But you got to go through fights, so it's harder than it can't play.
Okay. Now, you look like, let's say, like you've been sparring with some pretty big names, too. I got a list here. Sean Porter, Vince Martirosyan, and Rashad Holloway. Just a few guys. Anybody else on that list since then that you've been boxing to get ready to go pro?
I mean, I've been fortunate with a lot of good guys.
Part of the Super Six, the big middleweight tournament there. know that your friend that you've already boxed, you know, you've got some experience again, is already fighting for a title. That's got to be
it's definitely a great experience, you know, like I said, Andre the Real, Andre Ward, my cousin, but they both fight in the Super Six, Andre the Real fight Saturday, Andre the Real for,
Then not only did they have that for a nickname, but he had the whole cheering section. And when he started to really tune up his opponent there. You know, of course he's the hometown guy too, so he's got the big crowd. But they start saying bad news, you know, chanting it like that. And oh man, it was like he played off of it. I mean, it was perfect. And I'm just looking at your name here and trying to think of something that rolls off the tongue, and it just popped into my head. You can take it or leave it, but how about All Skill Don Yale Livingston?
About 45 minutes to an hour before I was able to get on the table. Dan is a Temple University, but
Bernard Hopkins is going to be coming there in December, and don't forget, early 2010 fight with Roy Jones, the rematch they're going to fight. And, Bernard was gracious enough to, hold the fight in Philadelphia, and hopefully I'll be able to attend it live. So they were doing this press conference, and I was reading some of the, information that came from it. And the one thing that I really liked, I was a little happy when Oscar De La Hoya put together the little folk version, because as a fighter, he was always trying to take care of the other fighters. He's not a guy like, he's done a lot of good things in this world. He's done a lot of bad things, and they're looking, at the bottom line. Oscar De La Hoya, the fact that he's a little fighter, he's going to look more or less, to help out his fighters, because he knows where it comes from. And he's got guys that put Shane Mosley and Marco Antonio Barrera on this. And the one thing that he came out and said yesterday was this fight on the Wednesday night is going to be broadcast live on the Versus Network. And what Oscar De La Hoya wants to do is to establish a relationship with the people at Versus to give them a good fight on December 2nd. And then hopefully from there, move on where he can promote a number of fights on the Versus Network. Which I think is great for the sport of boxing, great for the participants of the sport, and a little more exposure out there.
He's smart, he's always the guy that wanted to have a fight. He knows all the things that fighters go through. But he's in the position that he's in now, like I said, with the past experience of being a fighter. Not just being a regular fighter, but being a fighter that, they feel and he sees all the ins and outs.
Who runs the UFC, and he was saying how boxing's on the decline,
that fight, that this pay-per-view cards are so much better. And then and it was the week before the Floyd Mayweather Marquez fight. He was saying how like his UFC card was going to blow that one out of the water because they were offering real fights, and all Floyd was going to do was dance. So, you know, and that was kind of frustrating. But the one thing I didn't appreciate what Bob Arum was saying, I'm like, Bob, if you want to make boxing look like a better sport, don't trash the other sports. Do good fights. Absolutely, man. And what Bob did last week, he put a fight card together, and he actually didn't mean to do this. But Rich and I were talking about it. It was a fight at the Madison Square Garden between his young champion out of Puerto Rico, Juan Manuel Lopez, who was 24 knockouts coming into the fight. And he's fighting a kid that doesn't have a very good record by the name of Rogers Matagua. And Rogers was 26-12 coming in, and I think he had a prayer. Every publication I'm reading said, this fight's going to be a mismatch. And Bob Arum said, this fight's just a step up to when we should get the fight between Lopez and Gamboa. Well, as Rich knows, because I know Rogers Matagua very well, we used to train together in Philadelphia. So I've known him for the last almost 10 years. And I'm like, he doesn't have a great record, but he's a tough kid. He can punch. And that's what happened. This kid, Rogers, started after he had the shaky first year round, but when he found his rhythm, he started beating Lopez up pretty bad. And the fight was over, Lopez won a very close decision. And but he was hurt real bad at the final bell, and they were thinking about stopping it. And but they went through, and they asked Arum, do you think Rogers Matagua deserves a rematch? No. Why not? And they turned he goes, well, I mean, obviously Lopez won the fight, and there were some knockdowns that they didn't call. They said, no, Bob, those were slipped. He obviously slipped. Well, it doesn't matter. He was on the canvas, and he said, and they're like, why won't you give him a rematch? Well, we're looking for bigger and better things now. And it's like, and I said to Rich, I said, I'm going to translate that. Basically, I made a mistake. I put this guy in there with a kid that I never should have put him in there with just based on his record. And I don't want to ever see them in the same area code again, much less the same ring. And that's Bob Arum making himself, you know, look bad and trying to lie. I mean, we get these promoters that are lying snakes. I think that hurt the sport. I think that's what's going to actually really hurt UFC and mixed martial arts down the road if Dana White's such a lying snake.
Anytime, any punch.
Exactly.
And it happens with
behind you, you know, the next thing, you know, they call them shots, you know, they got my hurting, but they you remember it, it's still working like you lost the fight. You know, and it's not because you were either better prepared or under prepared. You just hit the four box. Anybody you can call. So, you're not prepared to.
Any given Sunday.
Exactly. You're not prepared for anything. You know, prepare to go out there and perform like a schedule. Prepare, you know, for the fight. That was your last fight. In the four box, you want to fit it. You know, and they just don't get a box. So, you know, you lost, you got to negotiate your contract, what knows about you, and it's a box. You know, they're very committed to amateur, they're pro, because in the amateur, it's like in the training, in the training, that's what you do, you don't get the question, you know, this can be your championship, you know, in a sports period, you know, you go to the pro,
of left hooks. I mean, ridiculous amounts. left hooks when I first started boxing. But now that I've done so much research into Rocky Marciano, I feel like a left hook is barely worth throwing. The right hook is the best thing on earth.
Nothing wrong with the left hook, pal.
No, but I mean, you know, I feel like because of Rocky's style and what he was able to prove with it, and you know, judged on the fact that I'm about the same height as he was, so obviously not the same build or anything even close to the athleticism yet, but very close. But anyway, he had the right hook because, you know, that was his frame. That was the best punch for his frame and his style, and has a little bit of his technique duck down style all my. Before I even started watching too much of his films, but now I'm watching so much boxing and so much Rocky film that I really adopted this crazy right hook. That's all I want to throw half the time. But, you know, you kind of grow into your own style, I've noticed, especially if you work a lot, you know, on your own. Because I've got a trainer that I work with up at the gym, but he really only says about 6 or 7 words to me the whole practice. He's a fighter. You know? I mean, he just picks up little things that I'm doing wrong as a fighter, and he tells me, like, you know, stop boxing around. You're not fucking Muhammad Ali. And I pick that up, and it works. I'm like, stop bouncing around. And, hey, I'm punching better.
Well, you know, a lot of boxing that I've learned have came from that. You know, I have a habit of, I would say that I watch a fighter, and I watch fighters and moves and the grand loop, and I'm like, hey, that'll work. And I'll basically see what that looks, and I can implement it into something I'm doing or something that I was doing, and it worked, you know. And I'll work on it until I perfect it. And then once I perfect it, you know, I have something new in my arsenal. Something with shoes, you know, and then I'll watch somebody else, and then I'll steal that move, and I'll implement it in. So now, you know, like I said, you know, this sport is evolving, you know. I've been fortunate to have the style and have the design and have all the stuff for all my experience and everything. It's very similar to the same fight the same, you know, a lot of guys prepare. You know, the person, I have to agree with Floyd Mayweather as far as watching tapes and everything. You could watch a tape on various times, but each fight is a different fight. You know, you could train to fight a guy that, you know, that boxed. You know, you could train to fight a guy that you left with this whole fight, but when he fights, you know, he can put up to the jabs, the right hand. So everybody's different. I've been fortunate enough to watch people make these different moves, but to know their style. And hey, you know, as you said, you watch how they lean, you pick it up. You know, I want their style, I'll pick it up. If it works, it works. If it don't, hey, never hurts to try.
Yeah, it's funny. In my last sparring session, the kid, I don't think he was aiming specifically for my shoulder, but his best punch landed on my shoulder, and it hurt like hell. So it reminded me of that Muhammad Ali thing. It also made me think, why didn't Marquez try that? That would have been a good strategy for him, to punch Floyd's shoulder, because that's his whole defense. But that's the only thing you think about after the fact, of course.
I mean, it's true, you know, a lot of people think someone is human or overbody, you know, yeah. You have to look at yourself in the mirror and say, okay, if I hit myself in the arm, it's going to hurt. So, I don't know, if I hurt me, it has to hurt somebody else.
Right.
You know, if I hit myself, you know, on the elbow and drive my elbow to my side, you know, it's going to hurt. So, you have to realize it's going to hurt somebody else. A lot of people just focus on the head, you know, what is the main section of the body. So where you have the arm, you have the shoulders, you know, you have the ribs, you have the midsection, you have the head, you know, and lots of sort of relying on you jabbing at someone, and when you guys happen to be doing the same punch, and you can see each other in the gloves, depending on the force of that hurts.
Right.
So I've experienced those virtually, and that hurts. And
like a foot stomp in MMA, you know, guard coming in with a jab and you knock their punch down, even doing that will hurt the knuckles sometimes.
Exactly. I know some practice perfect touches and things of that nature. But, you know, that's like boxing. Sometimes you got to resort to things how solid the box. You know, if I'm constantly giving things a jab or trade my hands and I can't move, you know, you have to think, what can I do to get off the lane?
Right. And I think a lot of people pick on Floyd because, I mean, his style is a very effective one, but it's not very entertaining a lot of times. But, you know, that's just the way he was brought up. You know, he's a perfectionist, he's a defensive fighter, and it works, you know. So I think people get frustrated because he can get away with that, you know, whereas some other fighters can't. You know, and like I talk all the time about how the basics, you should never stray from the basics until you fully master them. You know, and the basics of boxing teach most people when they start that you keep both hands up by your face at all times, and you keep your elbows in, and you know, you cover all areas when you need to. And then some of the boxers that come out of certain camps change it all up at a certain point. They go to what's called an up jab. You know, they keep that left hand low. A perfect example was probably Malignaggi in the Diaz fight. They were even calling it the up jab. That's like the first time I've heard them say that. But, you know, a lot of boxers just shoot that's just their regular jab. You know, they don't consider it even an up jab, but that's just how they box. Anyway, made a long story short, you know, that's just how it should be. You know, you don't go to that point right away. You don't want to start off like that. You know, maybe naturally you're built to be a fighter. You know, but you're going to find out if you try to start that way without going through the basics, it's not going to end up good, unless you just happen to have the bare luck of a natural. But you know, 9 times out of 10, you got to go through all the basics and master those, and then you can get funky. But once you realize that you've learned all that stuff and you can go to that next level, that's when you really start thinking, well, you know, I'm getting good at this.
Interesting too. You mentioned Bob Arum.
Mayweather-Pacquiao fight probably won't, it won't even happen next year because of the, you know, the rift between the, what the split is going to be and all that. And, you know, it's interesting to compare the two styles because there's going to be, obviously, over the next few months and maybe years, because we're not going to see these two fight for a while, there's going to be a lot of debate over who's better. And to me, it'll always be Manny until they fight, you know, because to me, Manny is the perfect mix of speed and power. And I think we saw a little bit of, you know, something that could match up with it in Mosley. Well, no, and Mosley was, when we actually talked to Keisha about Mosley a couple weeks before his big fight there. Who did he fight when he just showed up? Oh, yeah, it just totally blew him apart. And, you know, Keisha was telling us that she saw him in practice and there was something new in him. He had some power and he was making that heavy bag hit the ceiling, you know. And I think maybe he saw Pacquiao and picked that up, that Pacquiao just has that great mix of speed and power that we haven't seen in a boxer in a very long time. And now that's why he's been able to step up and wait and take on guys like Oscar De La Hoya, albeit in retirement almost, you know. But, you know, he still pretty much dominated the entire thing. And, you know, nobody's been able to really step up. And I think Floyd has come back for that reason. You know, he's definitely going to fight Manny one of these days, but I just think he's going to make it difficult until he feels he's fully ready and until, you know, Manny's exhausted his opponents. You know, because Manny, I think Manny has to get used to the welterweight division before he even steps up to Floyd. You know, he hasn't really gotten used to it yet. He's just starting to parade.
I'm going to with Don King, but the one thing that both of their promotions did, and I can't think as much with Golden Boy, but it's one of Golden Boy's top fighters, but on offense. You know, but this fight with Roy Jones, I think I've come out, but this fight's been talked about for, you know, they've been 17 years, and it was being talked about 7 years ago in 2002, when they took the man down to Felix. And, but they looked up there arguing about money. And Roy at the time wanted the 60-40 for him. And Bernard said, no, it's going to be 50-50. And then after Roy got knocked out a few times, and Bernard was still on top of the mountain, they were talking about it again, and Bernard said, no, it's going to be 60-40 me now, and Roy was willing to go 50-50. And probably, but I think this is brilliant, and I hope I see more of this. 50-50, benefit of the knockout, 60-40. And if you don't, and then all of you don't want to put a bet on, we'll say, okay, maybe I get 60, maybe I get 40. Then you know for sure, Jim,
fast, and there was just no reaction time whatsoever from De La Hoya. And it was just, you know, he was stung before he could swat at the bait.
Well, it's kind of bad because it's a tough fight. We got, I mean, for sure, we got a Pacquiao's got a very tough fight coming up about a month from now with Miguel Cotto. I mean, that's Andre and he'll walk over. Yeah, I mean, Cotto's a very skilled fighter, but for the last year, he looks like he's been on the decline. I mean, let's be, you know, 100% honest. He's had some real tough fights with Margarita, whether he's not with Margarita, whether he's not with or not. And then he had a very tough fight with Joshua Clotty. So Pacquiao gets through him, and he cuts him up, stops him late, which is the way I see the fight turning out. You know, just using superior hand and foot speed. If he comes on and then decides to have a fight, you know, with Floyd Mayweather, it's going to be a tale of, you know, can Danny just overwork him and just put so much pressure on him and make things so uncomfortable for Floyd that he breaks down? Or is it the fact that, you know, Floyd is going to love having him come forward and just using his shoulder rolls and his defense and land counter punches?
You know, I agree with you. I definitely have to agree with you because, you know, even with the fight with Manny and Cotto, like you said, he definitely, you know, walking the park. A lot of people forget that Cotto can box, you know. And like I said, Manny's going to have to fight a smart fight because, you know, this fight that he had with Juan Manuel, you know, Juan Manuel, if he is throwing it, you know, he's technically able to get Pacquiao with a good shot. You know, Pacquiao was able to, you know, pull out the fight, you know. However, if you look at on the other hand, okay, Manny is a big guy. Although they're fighting at 145, you know, I believe that on that fight, I believe Cotto's going to get in the ring at no less than 160. You know, he walks rounds. Guys that have the confidence
like I said, that are going on or that are coming up. But they have big names like Oscar De La Hoya and all these other good fighters he's just fought. You have a guy that Oscar believes he's on top of the world. And in Florida, you also have a guy that he honestly don't believe that he can beat. So you have two lions to read literally fight for territory, and lions don't give up easy. And what you're going to have? You're going to have outsiders fight. And like I said, I'm looking forward to that fight. Because you can't really forget, you know, who's going to win. And it's one of those classic, you know, oh, this is going to be fight of the year.
Right.
Both these fighters are going to be tested. And neither one of these fighters can afford to make a mistake. Because that one mistake, you know, can cause them to fight, you know. Whereas if Manny is strong enough to catch Floyd with a right hook. And that is, you know, Floyd has, like I said, them tested with speed like that. So we don't know how Floyd will react to that kind of, you know, speed and power. Whereas
right.
Manny, we don't know how to get that power because what do you have? You have a guy that's hungry. You have a guy that's willing to go all out and say, okay, look, this is what I do. I'm ready. And the only way I'm going out is on my shield.
So
that's
a little bit of an ethnic situation there, too. You got Filipino versus Puerto Rican there, you know. So we got you got all the fan bases behind them, you know. They're fighting for their race, too, in that situation. You know, Manny always fights for his country. He's been adopted pretty well in the U.S. So far, too. But they're fighting now about his training camp being in the Philippines. You know, it's funny. Well, why can't it be in his home country? You know, why? I didn't really say that when we were talking about it earlier, but I always thought that was kind of funny how, you know, people are fighting over the fact that he wants to fight at home and he wants to train at home. And you know, obviously, he doesn't fight at home that much because they don't have any fights in the Philippines for that. But I don't know. That whole debate just kind of—it just makes it more of an advantage for the promoters, I think, to call it off and to postpone it and put it off. I mean, you know, that's what they want. They want people to be talking about that, and, you know, anticipating it. You know, throw these guys out in front of the crowd a few more times before they make it happen. You know, they don't want to blow their wad too soon. So
exactly.
All this discussion, of course, and Mayweather being so good at hyping everything, it's just going to bring more interest to the debate. And, well, you know, we'll see them fight common opponents maybe here, you know, similar opponents. Maybe we'll see Floyd sign the deal to fight Mosley, because they were kind of eye-to-eye at the end of their fight, at the end of the Floyd fight there between him and Marquez. The mic got stolen at one point, I think, but
I'm going to tell you what I was writing in my latest article, which was the preview of Mayweather and Marquez. I said, when Pacquiao was really making the move, when Mayweather retired in December of 07, when Pacquiao was trying to, you know, take over, be a pound for pound, he had that close win over Marquez, which I felt was a just decision. I thought Pacquiao won that fight. And then what did he do? He pulled up De La Hoya. Mayweather beat by a close decision. I thought Mayweather won the fight over De La Hoya. You know, he won more rounds. De La Hoya was effective, changing the pressure and including the chest and shoulders, and had thrown enough punches. But Pacquiao did Pacquiao destroy De La Hoya. Then he goes on to fight Ricky Hatton. Do Floyd beat Ricky Hatton? Ricky Hatton gave him a few airy moments in the early rounds. Well, Pacquiao knocked him out in two rounds. So now everybody's really get hyped over Manny Pacquiao. But look at these guys that Mayweather, you know, was less impressive against. What's Mayweather do? Mayweather goes out, he fights the guy that gave Pacquiao the most trouble in two fights, and then dominates him. And then it's almost like two lions are each, you know, like we said earlier, they're each trying to, you know, get the stroke on their side, trying to, you know, get the hype on their side. And then, well, Pacquiao was like, well, I just destroyed two guys and troubled Mayweather a little bit. Maybe they come back and say, I just whipped the guy that gave you a lot of trouble. People still beat you. Now people say, you know what? This could be a really good fight. And sometimes you have two great fighters, but their styles never mesh and never make a great fight. And so you wonder how you turn around and you have two good fighters that are not great, And the perfect example is Gotti and Warner. They were two very good fighters. I would say either one of them was something great, but they just meshed together perfectly. Their styles matched up perfectly. And when you get that, you go, off, down, back, down, back, you can get ready. And that's what I love being a fan more than anything.
Watch fight, and Williams, a guy you know well. So what do you think is going to be the outcome there?
You know, it may sound like I'm a bit biased, you know, but I mean, when you look on paper, in the pro game, naturally, Andre Terrell is the underdog, you know, naturally, if you look on paper. You know, however, you know, a lot of people think it, I mean, both Andre Terrell and my cousin Andre Moore, a lot of people say, oh, they don't have the experience, you know, they're not ready, you know, they never fall in the same thing with men. A lot of people fail to realize is both of them went to the Olympics. You know, both of them medaled. What kind of season, you know, what do you think that is? You know, that's for average, oh, okay, I'm going to walk in the park. That's a big stage that they had to compete on. You know, all the others around and all, they're both undefeated. They're both great fighters. But I believe that, you know, out of all Andre Terrell, you know, I've watched Carl Bolt fight. I've seen Andre Terrell fight, and he's very awkward. He just hardly trained against him. I believe that Carl Bolt is going to definitely test his strength. I think he's not going to, he's going to put his body on him, you know, run him around and get the strength against him. Because me personally, I believe that's one of the best he had. When it comes to boxing, it's hard to hit Andre because he's mean, he turns, he's awkward, you know, he throws punches from every angle, and they're nice, sharp punches. They're not wimpy punches. You know, he's a great boxer, it's hard to hit his tackles. You know, so I believe that Andre Terrell, I believe that if Andre's been back in boxing for 12 rounds, I believe he can do absolutely great. You know, and, like I said, it may sound like one of the biased, but I think that's the way to call folks. So, he's kind of a boxer, he's more of a maker. You know, in the show when he fought Jermaine Taylor. You know, Jermaine, you know, he's a good fighter as well. I thought he was willing to fight. I think if he would have got it in the 12th round, he would have still put a fight out. You know, that's my personal belief. But, you know, right there, Carlos, he's strong. He definitely has the potential to, you know, hurt the real to catch him. But you have to catch him. And that's hard. So I like the real in that fight.
Okay, how about the one going on over in Berlin, also on Saturday? The big super middleweight matchup between Arthur Abraham, also undefeated 30-0 with 24 knockouts, fighting Jermaine Taylor, who actually Carl Froch is coming off a win against in April. Is it April of this year? So we'll see what happens. I think that's one thing that keeps boxing above beyond mixed martial arts is the fact that it's a real worldwide sport, and people tend to forget how popular it is in Europe. It's a completely different style over there, too. So these guys have fought most of their fights over in Berlin, in the case of Arthur, in Germany, and in the case of Frotch in England, in the United Kingdom. So, I mean, they've got to have more fights with guys who fight like them, you know, stand up, both hands up, like I talked about earlier, and not guys that use up jabs and different style maneuvers feints and all that kind of stuff, so we could see a little bit of an element of styles make fights, you know, not just because of where they're from, but because they haven't fought anybody with different styles like that. And we'll see what happens. But any final thoughts on your part? Anybody you want to give a shout out to or anything like that, Daniel?
No, I just want to say right now, unfortunately, a lot of people in the pro game, they have a little, and you know, surely they will. Or stay tuned. Should look up there because, before they know it, you know, I'll be going to be checking as well. So, you know, like I said, stay tuned. Keep supporting me, keep following me on Facebook. You can follow me on MySpace at MySpace.com/4.0. And
they can follow me
as well on Twitter. And Daniel, I'm looking for the future. You know, it's been great talking to you guys. And it's a pleasure.
All right. All skill, right?
All skill, okay. Great deal. Daniel, it was great talking to you. You know, thanks for working with you. And, you know, I'm on MySpace too. And, you know, it's going to be, I'm on my more track of the rich stage and everything.
Thanks a lot. It was great talking to you. Great night.
Thanks. You guys have a good one.